And it's as if the universe heard that desire and sent this emissary, you know. So maybe it was accidental that we bumped backs, or maybe she was sent. Who knows?
Another fear, rejection. You know, it's like dating. It's like many things in life. And it's inevitable. You know, it's like you're going to get rejected. But for some people, it's overwhelming. You know, and I'm not even talking about, you know, in business. I'm talking about just some people stay in their homes because they don't, and single, because they don't want to get out. You can't not handle a rejection from a man or a woman. Again, what would you advise them?
Oh, I would just say that you're one step closer to your goal. And, you know, so many people have failed with businesses. Walt Disney, Thomas Edison. I mean, all these titans of communications, movies, inventions. I mean, you read biographies of all these great men. And, you know, Piaget, I think a French educator, and he started the Montessori school system. And he had a great saying where in that school system, he allows kids to be creative rather than memorize everything like a robot. And one sentence he said, I've never forgotten, Piaget wrote, a mistake is just another way of doing things. So I think if you're rejected or your business fails, everything happens for a reason. It's to teach you something. You know, and the underlying philosophy that I've learned is that nothing happens to us. We direct the movie totally from the inside out. And Fred, I really believe with 100% of my being that our minds are magnets. They are electromagnetic, and we don't attract what we want. We attract what we are. What we are internally, spiritually, at this level right now is what we manifest externally. And I really believe that's how reality works. I don't think things are accidental, or, you know, it comes to you accidentally. I really believe, just like film directors, we are directing that movie from the inside out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And last fear, the third fear that I notice is fear of failure. Because when you fail, it's humiliating. It's humbling. You're no longer, you know, popular, or, and sometimes you even hurt other people. Again, well, I mean, how do you handle fear, failure?
Again, I think it's a teacher. And I think sometimes if you succeed right away, you don't learn enough to keep that career, to give it longevity, to keep it fireproof or bulletproof. But I think by failing, failure teaches us more than success does. So I think that failure is not to be looked at negatively, but it's to almost be embraced and say, thank you for the lessons. Now I'm a step closer to my goal or to success.
Let me ask you this. Earlier you talked about intuition. And how do you think that writing helped you in getting in touch with that intuitive part of you?
That writing does?
Yeah.
Oh, totally. You know, there's a blind writer from Argentina named Borja. And yeah, he couldn't see.
You said a blind writer?
Or poet. He was known for his poetry, but, you know, short essays about labyrinths and libraries. It was sort of this imaginary world that he created. But he's sort of the writer's writer, B-O-R-G-E-S. And he said when you're writing is going good, he called it a guided dream. And wow. I get that sense where it makes the time-space continuum disappear. When you're, you know, lost in that creative process, maybe you started at 10 o'clock in the morning, and then finally when you look up to take a breath, it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Mm-hmm. But that time of, you know, 5 hours, 4 hours, seemed like it went by in 4 minutes. And I think that's the great thing about creativity. And that's why so many artists stay so young as they age, so vital. I mean, look at Picasso. You know, he's almost 90 years old and he's still studly and, you know, just cranking out this art. And it just reverses that time-space continuum. But it's a sense of a guided dream. So I think the writing does open the door to your subconscious. And that's the guiding light, you know, that really should guide us, not the worrisome mind coming from the top of our heads.
All right. What is the link between creativity and spirituality, if there is one in your opinion?
Oh, I think they're one and the same. Mm-hmm. Because I really think that life is school and we're here to grow a soul. And I'm not talking about, religion. I mean, I respect everybody's religions, mm-hmm. but when man gets involved and meddles in religions, then almost every war that's ever happened in humanity has been driven by someone's religion, whether it's the Crusades, Christianity, whether it's jihad, what's going on now. I mean, the two words together, holy war, to me, what God would allow one drop of blood to be shed from anybody? So I think that religion, when man gets involved and you know, makes it artificial, but spirituality, everybody has that soul. And I think the deeper you develop your soul, the more effective you are with your creativity. And even sex to me is, you know, the Catholic Church, I was raised as a Catholic. Everything was a sin. Everything, sex was dirty. No. I mean, Henry Miller called it the rosy crucifixion.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that image, whether the arms of the cross or the women's legs, I mean, it's just such a beautiful image. But to me, sex, when it's with somebody you love, oh my God, it's like a rocket ship. It's just when you unite energies with somebody on a spiritual level, the sky's the limit. It's just phenomenal. And when you think about it, sex, creativity is behind everything. It's behind great art. And, you know, I think when we try to repress that, people get depressed. If you try to shut down someone's vitality, their sexual drive, their very sap of the tree, then they're unhappy. We have to be those free flowing. I think it was D.H. Lawrence, the great author, that said, be a good animal. You know, don't lose that instinct that's in your body.
It's interesting when you mention Henry Miller, because, you know, sometimes when I read him, I go, if he would send this manuscript to, you know, publishing houses today, I mean, he would get rejected automatically almost. You know what I mean? Because he doesn't, you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, it's such a different world where everything's politically correct. And I mean, we're so careful, and I mean, rightly so. We don't want to offend people, but you know, my goodness, I'm Polish. You know, my grandfather came from Poland, and I tell Polish jokes all the time. I mean, I think the world has to lighten up a little bit. You know, we're too critical and serious that way.
Do you have a specific creative process?
I'm writing all the time. You know, whether I'm taking a shower, going for a run, I used to carry a notepad with me, but now with a smartphone, you know, you can just record anything. It's just a constant flow. But writers have different techniques when they sit down. Some people burn incense to put themselves in that mood. But I really feel that, you know, I'm never blocked as a writer, because if I'm going to write a long book, I never get overwhelmed by, oh my God, I got to put all that in there or whatever. I just write scenes on note cards. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that I didn't know this until later. I learned about it, that Nabokov, you know, the great Russian writer that created Lolita, that's what he would do. That on these kind of postcard size pieces of paper, he would just write scenes. And then he would move them around on his office wall like puzzle pieces and then sort of connect them. Mm-hmm. And he would never write sequentially or linearly, you know, in a straight line. He would sort of write all over the place and just piece it together. Mm-hmm. And that way you're never blocked, or the flow never stops. Mm-hmm. If you just do one small scene at a time.
Do you believe in writer's block? I mean, do you believe that it can happen to someone?
Well, you know what I tell people all the time, you know, that want to be writers or at the beginning, I say, don't think, just write. And it's almost like what Henry Miller and a lot of those authors did in the Lost Generation in the 20s and 30s in Paris, the surrealist, is if you just sit down with a pen, piece of paper, or your keyboard and just write what's coming, stream of consciousness, get warmed up. You know, a lot of people think too much. They overthink it rather than finding that subconscious voice and allowing it to rise to the surface.
Let me ask you this. A lot of artists have a hard time mixing money and their art. You know, the starving artist myth and all. Well, I don't know if it's, I don't know if to you it's the myth, but you know, I don't, you know, how do you mix financial abundance and art?
Well, you know, it's too much for an artist or a writer to do the marketing side as well. There's very few people that I know that do both. And you're not very effective if you try to market or sell yourself, because then you sound like a blowhard. You sound like you're too full of yourself if you have to extol your own talents or virtues. So that's why I think it's good to find a partner. And even better is to find a love partner that can sort of help or take over that job of selling you. Because if they can sing your praises, it's much more effective than you trying to talk about your own virtues. And I've been very, very fortunate to meet a woman, and that happened with this crazy cosmopolitan thing, who sort of helps manage my career, gets on the phone when the checks are late, you know, and it also helps having an agent, you know, being represented by somebody, even though you have to share 15% of, you know, what you make with them. Because it's too overwhelming, especially today when the media and people wanting, you know, whether it's YouTube videos or, you know, everybody's just trying to be that artist. And it's so much harder now for the millennial generation because the competition is just so much more, it's so much more thick.
How do you remain calm in uncertainty?
Calm in uncertainty?
Yeah.
I think back to all the near-death moments that I have been through, especially living in the wilderness, and it reduces any challenge down to just like nothing. Because if we have 9 lives like a cat, I have about 1.5 left. That's how close I've physically have come to death. But I really believe that everybody enters this world with a life plan. Call it a blueprint. And somewhere in that blueprint is our exit point when we're supposed to leave. But no matter what stupidity I do, I haven't checked out yet until I get to that point. Because I think I have lessons to learn before that point, and maybe I have some knowledge to share before I'm meant to leave. So when you go through, you know, the near death where, I mean, it is literally life or death, anything that seems complex or challenging sometimes is maybe a self-created monster. A lot of times, you know, that saying that the only thing to fear is fear itself. And I think there are a lot of phantoms that we also create.
We're going to wrap this up. 2 more questions. You mentioned near-death experiences. Can you tell us one?
Well, living on the island, no radio, no telephone, no communication, totally off the grid, but to read the weather, and it's some of the worst weather in the world up there because the wind in the winter can blow 70, 80 miles an hour from the southeast, and the rain lasts not for days but for weeks. But you learn to read the weather by looking at the clouds, and there's clouds called wind doggies or mare's tails. It just looks like a horse's tail across the sky, and that's telling you that there's some big wind coming. And you also study the ocean, and you can tell by the color and movement, you know, you become that good animal, and your instincts take over. So everything looked good. You know, the clouds weren't moving. The ocean was calm. And to go in to get supplies, it was about 12 miles away to a native Kwakiutl town. You know, 12 miles, you can get in a car and you can drive that in about 5 minutes. But in a boat, a tiny little boat with a little outboard engine, that could take, you know, as long as a day, depending on the tides and everything else. So, Fred, I got halfway out. There was a little island called the Point of No Return where you're entering this big stretch of open water. And all of a sudden, I said to myself, where's all the birds? Like, where's the animals? I'm not hearing any, you know, gulls crying. I'm not seeing the eagles or ravens. And you know how animals can tell if there's an earthquake coming or a big storm. They have that animal sense, and they head for higher ground or batten down the hatches. So there are winds up there that come off the glaciers that are hanging on these mountains. And if the air is a lot warmer than the ice, it'll produce these willow walls, they're called. So here I am, long story short, calm ocean, calm sky. 20 minutes later, there were 18-foot waves on the ocean, kicked up by this big wind that came down off the glacier. So there's 190 things you need to do every week in the wilderness, like a checklist. And sometimes I was so busy, I only got to number 87. And one of them was on this cedar dory, a wooden dory. It had an outboard engine on the back transom. And this would take 10 seconds, but I forgot to do it. Is you take the transom screws in your hands and you tighten the engine down so it sits tightly on that narrow board in the back of your wooden boat. Well, I hadn't done that in about a month. And every day of taking that dory out, that wood would flex in the ocean and in the tides. Well, riding down an 18-foot wave, I misjudged the speed of the wave and I pounded the trough. That outboard engine flew up into the air. Even though I had my hand on the tiller arm, it was wet, and the engine slipped out of my hand and disappeared. So there you are with no power. The boat goes sideways into the sea, and I remember ducking, and a wave roared over me, and I said, I'm dead. That's it. I'm going to drown. And then minutes, hours, I don't know, time later, I felt the wind on the back of my neck. I stood up. I was still alive, but there was water up to my waist. But what saved me is the man who hand-built that dory put a double bottom, and there was air trapped between the two bottoms of the boat, and that was enough flotation to stave off that heavy water weight. So by all means, I should have been dead. And then the waves pushed me into the shore, smashed the boat apart. I rolled right up to the feet of a Native American, and he nudged me with his toe, and he said, I always knew you white people were crazy, but now I know for sure.
Hey, if you were stuck on an island, $500 in your pocket, no one else, a laptop and an internet connection, what would you do? What would you do in the next 7 days?
With $500 and an internet connection?
Yeah, and a laptop.
Well, I would definitely try to get a date, because the worst part of the experience was the loneliness. And it wasn't the loneliness out of depression or despair. It was you felt most alone when something beautiful happened. And that was every day, the northern lights, iridescent pink and purple colors swirling around your cabin. The wolves on the island would come out on the beach and howl at the sky, at the lights. It was like the earth was serenading the sky. Yeah. And it was at moments like that that you just ached for another human being, preferably female, you know, that you could jump up and down and wrap your arms around each other. Yeah, so yeah. It would definitely be sending out a signal for, you know, somebody female, come and save me.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's what happened then with that crazy Cosmo thing, you know, with being the bachelor. My life is extremes. I go from no dates in the wilderness for 2 years to having, you know, thousands of letters from women all over the world. It was absolutely nuts.
Oh, man. I want to talk about that. I'm going to read your book and we're going to talk about it, because that's going to be an interesting conversation. where can we find you? Where can we find your work?
Online, amazon.com. My last name is hard to spell, but if they just type in wildlife, it's two separate words, then it would take people to my author page, and all my social media is listed there, and I'd be so grateful. And, you know, it's so great now with social media to be able to keep in touch with people directly instead of being an isolated writer somewhere. So I really appreciate, you know, everybody that has read my stuff and I am the naturalist on Princess Cruises in the summertime from May to September. I give programs on Alaska, and many people come on the ship to take a cruise to Alaska. And you should do your show from the ship sometime. It would just be amazing.
Hey, can you summarize wildlife for the listeners?
What's that?
Get it? Can you summarize wildlife for the listeners?
Well, wildlife is everything I know about.
That's your latest book, right?
Yeah, that's the new book. And it's about being a Bachelor of the Month every month, Cosmopolitan Magazine, which is the best-selling women's magazine in the world. It goes to 100 countries. It's translated into 87 languages. And every month they pick a single guy and they make him the Bachelor of the Month, where women can write to him from all over the world. So my literary agent at the time said, dude, Sigmund Freud once asked, what do women really want? When you're going into being Mr. November, why don't you study these women like you studied the wildlife in British Columbia and Alaska? So I love titles of books that have double meaning. So it's two words meaning the life is wild, wildlife, and also studying human females as if they are animals, which we all are, you know? So it's kind of a fun book, a lot of humor, a lot of sex, a lot of craziness, but there's a happy ending as well.
Wow. Awesome. Awesome. Hey, Michael, I love these types of stories. It's amazing to hear that stuff. And it's always fun to talk to people like you because we learn a lot. And I think we learn best by sharing. And man, your life is really, man, you had an awesome life.
Well, I just feel so fortunate. You know, I never wanted to play by the rules. I mean, I never do anything illegal, but I just always wondered, aren't we here for more?
Yeah.
Aren't we here for more than just making money and buying stuff? Aren't we here to challenge ourselves, you know, to maximize our potential? Because whatever you think about an afterlife or death, you know, there's never been a U-Haul that follows a hearse. You know, we can't take all of our possessions with us, but I really believe that the adventures we have, how we grow our soul, that somehow that does stick with us as we journey on to the spiritual realm. You know, that's to me the money that I'm after, the wealth and the treasure. It's the money that I do make, I turn it into adventures, because to me, that's why we're here, is to grow.
All right, guys. Thank you so much. Okay. Hey. This is, how did you like him? Yeah, I know you did. I know you liked him. Michael Modzelewski, thank you so much, man, for being such a great guest. It's just an uplifting, positive guy. It's always, always, always fun to kind of speak to these people, you know, to speak to these people. I love doing this, man. This podcast, I get to talk to you guys. I get to, you know, talk to people like Michael, and it's great, man. It's great. All right. It's time for me to ride off into the sunset. So catch me on frederickbai.com. What you're going to do now, there's one thing you can do now. There's only one thing you can do is you're going to go on frederickbai.com. You're going to enter your email. You're going to join our creatives community right now so you can get your free audio. And by the way, this audio is going to be, won't be available for, you know, for a while now. So it will not be available in a short time. So go get it. You're also going to get some giveaways that I'm planning to give in the next few days or weeks. You got to subscribe to know about it. So go right now. Frederick, that's my name with a C. Frederick with a C. Bye, like bye-bye, .com. And right before I leave you guys, I just want to leave you with this quote. The creative process is a process of surrender, not control. From Julia Cameron. With this, stay safe and don't forget, live with purpose, passion, and love. Bye-bye.